And unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So we're doing a hybrid event this morning. We have the people who are taking the precepts in the Zendo and a few other people. And then I'm also greeting all of you on Zoom. So let's see how this goes. It's an experiment. As most of you know, today we're doing a Jukai ceremony together. Three people will be receiving the Buddha's precepts and entering Buddha's way for 2,500 years. Buddhas and ancestors have been pointing us toward the Buddha way. And in this ceremony, we commit to realizing it. We step into the stream of the teachings. So I'd like to say a few words about the ceremony and the precepts for those of you that are not familiar with it. And as a reminder, a refresher for those of us that are. I think it's always good to recall ourselves to this aspect of our practice. In a sense, we already are in Buddha's way. So one image that I've thought of for this is it's like entering a gate that's standing in the middle of a field with no fences around it. It's like, you're already in the middle of the field. Why would you walk through this gate? But when we do it, when we enter the gate, in view of the community, we make visible our commitment, our dedication to living out the Buddha's way in all of our activities. We are saying with our bodies, hearts, and minds that we are aligning ourselves with our deepest intention and that we are accountable. The statements we recite reflect the intention that lives at the bedrock of our being. It is good for each of us to investigate the intentions that are our foundation. We ask, what do I rely on? What orients and shapes me? What shapes my actions and my response to the world? To clarify one's deepest values and intentions and commit or recommit to them is a powerful act, a very powerful act. The world needs us to do this. We need us to do this. We do not need to live by a Buddhist vow, but whatever it is, it perfumes our minds and hearts and shapes the world we and others inhabit. I think that is why these statements, these vows, that is why there is power in them. And they are more than just a good idea. The word precept in Sanskrit is sila, and it means to form a habit. The Buddhist precepts are not imperatives or directives from on high. They are a reflection of what works. They grew out of the experience of the human community that formed around the Buddha. So as he began to teach, people came. Something going on here that I want to hear about, that I want to know about, that I want to live. And over time, they saw, well, what works in this human community? What does it mean to live together in harmony? So these precepts guide us, but they also describe the awakened mind. They describe who we are as Buddha, awake. How Buddha awakeness acts in the world with others and internally. So these are also a description of what goes on internally. Actions are not just what we do with others. They're what we are inside. So we start this ceremony by bringing in all those that have gone before us, all those who have taken up and realized this path of awakening. We state clearly that despite what we may think, we are not different from them. Pretty shocking. We're not different from the Buddhas and ancestors. We are of the same nature, the same capacity, the same being. The first step in taking the precepts is one of repentance. And that's kind of an uncomfortable word, which is one of the reasons why I like to use it. What this means is that we acknowledge our humanness. That's what it means. We acknowledge the impact of our actions, particularly in the ways we have fallen down. And we take responsibility for them with a clear and courageous stance. Repentance in Buddhism is openness of heart. It is accepting ourselves and all beings with compassion and honesty. We make mistakes. We are, as our Jodoshin Buddhist friends say, we are foolish human beings. So we start by cultivating a stance of genuine and wholesome modesty. We recognize our humanness with gentleness and determination. Those two go together. Without care and gentleness, there can be no determination because we will flee. Without determination, gentleness becomes flabby. We have to have both. We return to our commitment to be in it with everyone. We do not ignore the troubles of the world or take lightly the mistakes we make, but we are also not corroded by them, not defined or stunted by them. Based in this posture of caring, connectedness and respect for others and for oneself, this fundamental posture, we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Refuge means to return, to fly back to. We return to Buddha, our true nature, Dharma, the teachings, and Sangha, the community. With refuge as the central pole of our existence, we give our lives generously, and we enact that generosity guided by the precepts. We ground ourselves in the steadfast aspiration to live our lives for the benefit of all beings with clarity and in harmony with others. We look for opportunities to make our vows real. And we are not too proud to ask for help, to turn to the Buddhas, to turn to the Dharma, to turn to the Sangha for support and sustenance. To take refuge is to recognize that we are always connected and supported, given our lives with every single breath, all beings together. The Buddha, we say, is Shakyamuni Buddha, but also the Buddha is our true nature. The interdependent, dynamic reality of all being. I think this can sound abstract, yeah? But it's not. It is more personal, more intimate than anything else. Our true nature is life itself, and all beings share it. To take refuge in the Buddha is to recognize that, to return to it, to take solace in it, and to allow it to shape us. To return over and over and over again to our true nature, even when we do not even know what it is. That's another topic, knowing and not knowing. The Dharma is the teaching. To take refuge in the Dharma is to open our lives to the teachings and have them truly, truly impact us. We return and again to the teachings and are guided by them. This includes deep, deep questioning. This is not a matter of blind faith or rote learning. That would kill the spirit of the way. In deep questioning, we investigate the teachings fully and honestly. We wrestle, we doubt, we question. We come to what is real for us. And then it changes as we grow and deepen in our practice. This is not an intellectual exercise, nor does it mean we have to study a lot. I want to make sure you understand that. To return to the Dharma is to return to one phrase, one word, one sentence, one paragraph, one thing that means something to you. It's not about gaining knowledge. That's great. Knowledge is great. I'm a big proponent of knowledge, but that's not the point. It's about personally engaging with the teachings, however that is true for you. The Sangha is the community. To take refuge in the community is to know and acknowledge that we are in this together. Our Buddhist practice community, our families, our neighborhood, the wider community, all beings. Together we support and we challenge one another. We know we cannot live without one another. In taking refuge, we allow what is most true for us, the spiritual, ethical, and personal center of our lives, to be shaped by, to grow in relationship to the Buddhist teachings and practice. Every day, we take refuge, we come back, we find our root, our source. Having settled, at least for a moment, into this relationship with Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we take up what are called the three pure precepts. We vow to live a life of non-harming. Right away, we see the impossibility of this. Right? How is that possible? We breathe, we eat, we move. And still, when you're asked, will you do this? You say, Yes, I will. No wimpiness. Even when it seems impossible, no wimpiness. Even when you're wimpy, and we all get wimpy, somehow something in you comes forward and says, yes, I will. When we do that, when we say, yes, I will, we enter into a world in which perfectionism is undone. Undone. If we hold on trying to be perfect, we will suffer. We're going to suffer anyway. This is the Saha world, but we just make it worse for ourselves. That is not the point of the precepts. And we see that when we are in this with everyone else who is also not perfect, right? We see our connection with others. We see our shared humanity, our shared being. Then we vow to embrace what is good and support it, knowing that we may never see clearly, still, we align ourselves with actions that benefit and support beings. This is not about figuring out what's right. This is about, as we say, throw yourself into the abode of the Buddha. Throw yourself into a life in which you can't see clearly, but you're aligned with this basic response. And that is the third thing we do. We vow to live for the benefit of all beings, which includes us, by the way. Don't ever forget that. When we live, when we align ourselves in this life for the benefit of all beings, a certain potential becomes clear to us. And then it goes away. But we can rest in this. We can rest in this. We can take solace in it. We can get energy from it. So, refuge, and then this basic orientation. And then we turn to the 10, what are called the 10 grave precepts. In a way, these are the nitty-gritty parts. They call us to look at the details of our lives and form habits that reflect our intentions. They actualize our intention and make it real every day, every day, every day. So the first of these great precepts is not to take life. Okay. Does that mean carrots? What does that mean? Again, if we get caught in perfectionism and rigidity, we're toast. So this means that we reflect on the value of life and respond to and in the world in such a way that we encourage it. We look closely. We see that we take life every day in some way. So again, we're brought back to humility, stability, connection with everyone. We vow not to kill the spirit of ourselves or others by our actions, not to be heedless of the life that pulses through all things. We could, in a sense, stop right there, right? That would determine all the rest of them. But these grave precepts give us a chance to look at things carefully. The second is to not steal. Another way of saying this, which I think is really telling, is to not take what is not given. Do not take what is not given. And to cultivate an awareness of all that we are given, to practice gratitude. So think about what it means to live a life in which we do not take what is not given. We have to not pay attention to what's given. We have to not steal. Third, we commit to not muse sexuality, to be aware of how we are with this energy, with ourselves and others, to maintain respect and care. We don't deny this energy. We don't try to pretend it's not there. We say, okay, like everything else in our lives, how do we pay attention to this? How are we with this, with integrity? Fourth, we vow not to lie, but to communicate truth. So we bring thoughtfulness to how we communicate. We take into account how dishonesty can harm and what it means, particularly in complex situations, to stay close to what is most true. So again, rigidity can get in the way here, but being floppy about this also doesn't work. We need to pay attention. We need to look carefully at what is honesty. What does that mean? How do we communicate truth? The fifth great precept is we vow not to indulge in intoxicants, but to support clarity. Intoxicants can be many, many things. It's easy to think about, you know, okay, well, I'm not gonna go on a bender with, you know, alcohol or drugs. But intoxicants are anything that spins us around and confuses us. So we can be intoxicated with hatred. We can be intoxicated with greed. We can be intoxicated by certain ideas or certain emotions. We need to be aware that this means not indulging in intoxicants, but to value clarity. Sixth, we vow not to slander, to speak with kindness and care. We watch what we say. We watch how we say it. We do not harm others with our speech as best we can. This does not mean we have to be nice. As one of my teachers says, we do not fall into the tyranny of niceness. But it does mean that we don't speak ill of others, we don't slander, and we take care with our speech. Is it the right time? Is it with kindness? Is it true? Seventh is to not praise self at the expense of others, but to cultivate genuine humility. So we respect ourselves and value others in this way. It does not mean that you can't find joy or satisfaction or delight in having done a good job at something, or that was hard and I handled that well, or whatever. It means you do not praise self at the expense of others. You do not need to rank beings. Do not rank beings. You value everyone, and you come back to humility, genuine humility. And as I've said before, I believe it was Thomas Merton who said, humility is being completely who you are. self. Eighth is we vow not to be possessive, greedy, covetous, but to cultivate generosity in all our relationships. So in this precept, we come to be able to spot our possessiveness, our greed. And when we work with that, we come to know the freedom of letting go of the grip of possessiveness, or having possessiveness not grip us. We come to know the aliveness of generosity and sharing. Ninth, we vow not to harbor ill will, carry a grudge, fan the flames of anger, but to cultivate a broad view that is not bound by anger and hatred. This does not mean that anger will not arise. It doesn't mean you won't experience it. Or that if you do, you've somehow failed. It's what you do with it that matters, not to harbor it, not to carry a grudge, not to fan the flames. And last, we vow not to bring harm to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, but to value and support them. So these are the precepts that guide us, that we work with every day, that we return to, we recite. And these are the precepts that you will be taking today. Yeah. For those of you that have not been to one of these ceremonies before, after we complete the receiving of the precepts, each person receives a new name, a Buddhist name that they don't know yet, that is given to recognize and inspire. You are given a lineage document that lists the ancestors all the way down through the teacher that gives the precepts, and includes your new name there. And one of the things that we do here at Ocean Gate is each of you has written out this lineage document. You know, I've seen the whiteout too. It's great. I love it. Because this is us, this is human, not perfection. This is one of the reasons why we sew rakusus, and we do this, is because it brings us into relationship with being human. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to out anybody here.
That's all right.
You think you're the only one, right? No. We have stories to tell.
All right.
Yeah. And then everyone is given Buddha's robe, the rakusu. And this robe, for those of you that haven't done it, is sewn by hand. And every stitch is taking refuge. Every stitch. Namuke butsu. Namuke butsu. Namuke butsu. Taking refuge over and over and over again. Looking at the stitches. Thinking it's not as pretty as the other person's. Making it and then wearing it on your chest for everyone to see. So cool. In a way, taking the precepts is beyond what we can understand or not understand. You know, it's something that we do, knowing or not knowing, it varies. So taking the precepts invites us to live fully in this world. Direct, deep, kind, honest, concrete. Attaining enlightenment or not attaining enlightenment. This is not the point. This is really like attaining, going after is not the point in our practice. Our practice is to enact the enlightenment that's already our true nature, to make that a living reality in this world. That's what we mean by realization, making real, realization, that which is already true. So we can rely on and return to this over and over and over and over and over and over. It's pretty simple. That's pretty impossible. That's pretty complicated. But we just keep. This is taking a journey with all beings, a journey of realization. Suzuki Roshi said it is like walking in the mist or walking in a dew-covered field. Slowly your robes get soaked. Soaked through with the Buddha Dharma Sangha. In this way, we walk hand in hand together and hand in hand with the Buddhas and ancestors. So this ceremony is a joyous occasion. Relax, okay? Relax, enjoy it. I hope everyone will celebrate with all of us this ancient way of the Buddha. And if you have taken the precepts before, please renew them today as we go through the ceremony. Renew your commitment to them. And if not, consider how they may have meaning for you in your own way. Again, reflect on what is your deepest intention. Okay. Thank you very much. So...